One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have.
Swangled in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Iconic or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate you taking the time to check us out. We know you have a million choices out there, so thank you very much. This show is brought to you by a couple of our sponsors, Delete Me. The tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all kinds of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me removes your personal information like your name, address, age, phone number, email address, and photos of your home from leading data broker sites. Removing personal information from data broker websites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. These guys really understand opt-out and privacy policies, so you don't have to spend your time focusing on things like legal jargon. Delete Me has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and CNET. With over 20 million personal listings removed, DeleteMe is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available. So check them out by using the link in the description to see just how easy it is for them to take back your personal information. And we're also brought to you by Fiverr. If you need to outsource your work or just need specialized help with a project that you're working on, you need to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. If you need someone to build out a website or just help you to grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign, you can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set at Fiverr. Your payment is only released to the freelancer once you're pleased and approve the work that you've received. So if you have any questions, you can check out Fiverr, 24/7. Just click the link in the description box and start putting this army of freelancers to work for you. And lastly, we are brought to you by Cash Advance. We are living through a very strange time filled with an unbelievable amount of uncertainty. We don't know what the world's going to look like a week from now, let alone months from now. But if you find yourself in a financial emergency and in need of money right away, you at least have an option with Cash Advance. You can submit your request online and receive an answer in minutes so that you'll know where you stand and what programs they have available for you. Their online service is entirely free and works to find potential lenders in their network. So just fill out the secure online registration form and see which option works best for you. Look, I hope that you don't need this service, but if you do during this crazy time in our lives, at least you know that you have another option available to you with Cash Advance. So click the link in the description box to see what they have to offer. And as always, any support for our sponsors works to directly support the show as well. And speaking of the show, I'm super excited for this one because I have been a guest on the Power Hour several times, and as recently as a couple of days ago, and the host and I had a nice little chat, and we decided, oh, wouldn't it be good if you came on my show as well? So, without further ado, we have the host of the Power Hour, Daniel Brigman here. Daniel, thanks for joining me. It's interesting that we've got the tables turned, so I'll go as easy on you as you've got.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure being here. Thank you for the invite. I don't know how old you are. We may be about the same age. There's a song called Video Killed the Radio Star. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Well, I think I'm living that. I just came off of a radio show. Normally, you know, I had to dress up to be here. I had to go put on a shirt, a hat. I mean, yeah. this is crazy, this video. So I'm very excited. Thank you so much and your audience. Oh, good to thanks. Be here.
And I sent, like, when we set this up, we were texting back and forth. And I said, you know, yeah, it's going to be a video interview. So put your pants on.
Yeah. Yes, pants are on. Check.
I just have this vision of, like, you know, the old school news anchors that were in the suit and, you know, in the jacket. And the tie and the shirt and
boxers.
And boxers, exactly. I remember that living in LA and we had a big earthquake, and it was like Paul Moyer got to the station in LA as fast as he could, and he's in his suit and tie, but he made, you know, he stood up a little bit and you could tell he had shorts on, and I thought, oh, this is so great. It's peeling back, seeing behind the scenes, and you realize these anchors, they're not even fully dressed, let alone fully prepared, you know.
There's a metaphor there somewhere, isn't there? There's an allegory.
There certainly is. And it's nice. So you've had me on the Power Hour. And what I came to realize, and you mentioned this a little bit to me, there's a deep history with this show. It's not just you. It goes actually before you. So tell us a little bit about how this whole thing came about. And now you're taking on, you're like the next generation. Tell us a little bit about the show.
Well, Joyce Riley is synonymous with the Power Hour because, well, frankly, she started it in, I don't remember the year, but it's been about 20 years. So somewhere around 2000, I think before then she was doing work. She came out of the military and people were sending her information about basically experiments on soldiers. She began to get attention. She went on coast to coast. She got the word out. She had the documents and that soldiers were being experimented on. That turned into the beginnings of the Power Hour, and then many other, you know, type of health, vaccine information, medical information, what have you. So a wide variety of, you know, quote unquote truth, and whatever this is, whatever this independent type media is, she is an absolute pioneer in it. And, I think she predated, you know, most people out there, Rents Network. I think Alex Jones has been out there about that long, but she was one of those people. So, you know, she was got older and she had a lot of health problems. I started a food storage company, Namana Food Storage, with my family. So we met Joyce because of that, and she wanted to sell our food storage products. And so I would come on the show, and I mean, honestly, people ask me, they accuse me of being a Israeli agent or whatever, but literally this is how it happened. I was on the food or on the show selling food stores, talking about food storage. I think she liked me. I know she liked me. We began to do more shows. The shows went well. The audience liked me. And that morphed into, well, she's getting sicker. You know, she needs somebody to take over the show. She tried many people with varying degrees of success. The audience really didn't like them. They like me. Do you want to take over the show? I mean, that's literally how it happened. And so 3+ years, it's been just me on the show since Joyce died. And that's where we're at. That's kind of the history. We, you know, her tagline was always, it's all about the truth, which it still is. But I like to say, we want you to be happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be. That's kind of what our show is about.
Well, it's funny because right now what we're living through is there's never been a more relevant time to be involved in food storage as well as what we're seeing. We're seeing the wheels come off. We're seeing panic buying. We're seeing hoarding of toilet paper and news stories that are coming out every day about how the production facility of U.S. farms are being, impacted by, you know, they're talking about killing chickens and possibly cows and all of us conspiracy theorists out there that have been laughed at and mocked for all these years, talking about you better get prepared, you better get ready. What do we see? What's the common thread between Rents and the Rents Network and Alex Jones and you guys? You're all and Mike Adams to a certain extent. You're talking about the truth, but you're also encouraging people to wake up and actually be proactive and do something about food and nutrition and health. And I mean, I know you're way above telling everybody I told you so, but man, there's got to be part of you that just wants to told you so.
Absolutely. No, I'm not above it, Greg, Charlie. I'm not above it, Charlie.
You're right, though. You know, you're allowed to be right. And when you're right and everyone else is wrong, it's sometimes nice to say, listen, let's all acknowledge that I'm right. And you guys have been right about this. You've been right about talking about food, the importance of this. You've been right in selling it. You've been criticized, I'm sure, by some people for saying, oh, you're selling these kits. You know, you're selling astronaut food, dehydrated.
It's a sales pitch. Like, this is a sales pitch. You're taking advantage. Right. Exactly. You know, all the above. I told people, on the show, I use my in-laws a lot as a foil, you know, because I talk about my in-laws. My in-laws are they're very white bread America. I mean, they're traditional America, mainstream, kind of conservative, but mainstream America, or what was mainstream, Fox News, very medical background, and they think that I'm a lunatic. And so I'll use them. They think vaccine, there is, some of them are for mandatory vaccines. So I always use them as the foil. So I use them as the example. But, you know, they're not laughing anymore. They're concerned. They have attention. So I know America has attention on this. I would tell people, you know, months ago, years ago, for years, interviewers like you would ask me about food storage. They say, well, what do you tell somebody who thinks, well, when there's an emergency, then I'll prepare? And I told them for years, when there is an emergency, my ability to get you food goes down, goes way down. And we've seen this, the whole industry, this demand and this surge in interest is unprecedented in storable food industry, unprecedented. And nobody was prepared for it, or it can be. I mean, when you go from here is your interest and your sales, you know, there's spikes or whatever, to here, mm-hmm. You just, a business, an industry is not ready for that. Right. And so delivery has been slow. I mean, honestly, you know, it's 30+ days delivery. We have started to catch up. We've seen chinks in the supply chain, which is probably some of the things that we'll talk about. I've talked about supply chain. And we have an illusion. You're seeing glimpses of it at the grocery store. Toilet paper's not there. And when there's not toilet paper, there's a problem. You know, Houston, we have a problem. I can't get toilet paper. That's a problem. The meat aisle has been sparse. Now, like you said, now corporate media is even saying, hey, there might be meat shortages, what have you. Is this the new normal, quote unquote? To me, it reminds me of Cuba. You know, this is what it's like shopping in a socialist country, and our choices and things get diminished. And so the name of our show is The Power Hour. The power. You have power. You have dominion. This is a big part of what we do. The Declaration of Independence, our unalienable rights, dominion has been given to us to direct our lives, our founding fathers. That's what they dreamed of. That's our inheritance. So We try to focus on information that allows you to make choices that give you more power, independence, and certainly having your own food supply, having your own water filter supply, what have you. That's definitely part of it. So that fits in really with what the show is all about.
Yeah. But none of this power matters if you're unhealthy and dead on your couch or in a hospital bed.
Starving. Somewhere. Yeah. Starving, sick.
Right.
You know, broke. Starving, sick, and broke is a recipe for control.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I wonder, and this is speculation, but I wonder if after this, and I think we're all sort of in agreement that we're not going back to normal. We're going to some new version of reality. But I wonder if this might just be the wake-up call that the average American average person in general needs to come to a realization that, hey, listen, it's not the worst thing in the world to stock up on some food. I mean, yeah, if somebody tells you to go stock up on a bunch of bricks, there's only so many things you can do with the bricks. But with food, you can obviously eat it. If this apocalypse or this hurricane or tornado or natural disaster or martial law never comes, what's the worst that happens? You're stuck with a bunch of food that you can eat? I mean, this seems like logical common sense, but in a world of just-in-time delivery supply chain services where we go to the store by reflex instinct that when we go there, everything that we need will magically be there because it was there yesterday, therefore it'll be there today and probably tomorrow. It seems like this event that we've been living through and currently are living through has at least woken everybody up to the possibility that this supply chain that you talk about is not quite as solid and as established and unbreakable as we might want it to be.
Is it not? Well, to answer your question, the average American, I'm interested to see. I don't know. I'll see how my in-laws react and I'll get back to you. Okay. that'll be my answer. That's kind of my standard answer, is I want to see how they react to this. But yes, I hope it does. I think my instinct, I could be completely wrong, I think we are going to get this summer back to some semblance of quote unquote normal or whatever life as we knew it before this. But then again, in the fall, winter, what have you, I think it's going to come back around again. And there'll be another. I hope that people take that time, if there is a reprieve or whatever, a window, that they really consider and think about, their life, what's valuable to them, what's important, how they secure these things. Buying good quality food storage that lasts is a no-lose investment. You can't lose. You buy health insurance. I mean, you buy car insurance. If you don't wreck your car, you basically just flush the money down the toilet. Right. All you bought was a feeling or a legal right to drive. You know, you really got nothing for it. Food, you're always going to have something for it. And we know the value and the cost of food goes up. So it's really a no-lose investment. I'm not trying to pitch food storage. I'm trying to pitch independence. I'm trying to get people, just like you said, to have a different view of, you know, in Walmart we trust seems to be the national motto, not in God we trust. Yeah. We, like you said, it was beautiful. We assume that the toilet paper was there last week, so it's here today. It'll be here next week. Well, the toilet paper's not there anymore.
Yeah.
So how will people perceive that, and that will change their perception? I don't know. Some people who, you know, it only takes a small minority to really change the direction of a country. You know, the American Revolution taught us that. We're seeing progressivism on the other side. We're seeing that, you know, we're going towards a progressive type society. Your book, you know, The Octopus of Global Control, talked about that. It doesn't take a lot of people. So if there's people on that fringe who they are moved, they're inspired, they have a different vision, and they come over here and now are active and have conviction. And the number one word, the most important word to have right now, is conviction, because conviction will be king. In a world of illusion, in a world of varying choices and opportunities and what have you, conviction will be king right now. So can enough people in America, we're talking about America specifically, but Europe, the world, wherever, can they get enough conviction to serve their own best interest, to understand who they are in this place, in this world, and to secure their future? That's the $64,000 question, as they say.
Yeah, it's really exposed a lot of, just problems with our society from a societal standpoint, and problems in the business component, obvious problems with government and healthcare. we live in this sort of illusion that everything is fine, everything's going to be fine. We wake up in this normalcy bias flowing through us that we just make these assumptions. But one of the – maybe it's not even the worst thing that could have happened is that we're getting to – get a very honest assessment of how the United States is really run, how it's set up. And we're seeing that that it doesn't take a whole lot for the wheels to come off. Now, this has been a major event. At least it's been a major event by media standards. I don't know that it's been necessarily a major event in everybody's directly in everybody's life, having somebody affected by a virus. The numbers aren't adding up necessarily to that. But it's undeniable that we've had to take an assessment of our own lives and our country, the way it's actually functioning. And I got to be honest, it looks like the United States, you know, we are the emperor that has no clothes. It seems like there's a lot of inefficiencies that are being exposed, a lot of problems with our dependency on foreign governments. And we can go back and look at whether it was NAFTA, which outsourced all of our warehouse or our industrial facilities to China, and now we're being able we're having to depend on other countries. And that's fine if we depend on other countries, as long as we don't make those other countries mad and then they decide to withhold things. So we're going through this whole thing. What is, of all of the components of this coronavirus thing, what has been the most concerning aspect of it to you?
That's a great question.
Is it really the virus, or is it the response to the virus?
Well, you know, is the cure worse than the disease? You know, there was a time. I know it comes to mind, and that hopefully I can explain this accurately, not sound like a lunatic. I don't know.
It's okay if you sound like a lunatic on this, because that would be par for the course. Believe me, I'm fine with that.
Okay. All right. So I'll relax a little bit. There was a moment when, you know, on the show, we have fantastic guests from all very well-known people that your audience would know and talk about a wide, wide variety of subjects. And we talk about the future and we talk about the past and we speculate and we, you know, try to make sense of it and, you know, try to awaken people to some semblance of what would be the best choices going forward. But there is still, even in that, you talk about normalcy bias. There is still this bias that all those things you talk about, they're, most of them, they're out here. They're away. They're not here. You know, they're out here. Even me being on the show, you know, being a host of the show and dealing with this, you know, practically every day, that's out here. And when this hit, and understanding and have the perception of the control grid, the world, you know, basically, we can probably get into this, the Luciferian versus Christian type dynamic that is being played out. When this hit and I saw the talk of mandatory vaccines, I saw the talk of control, how our houses turned into prisons that we pay for, how there was no toilet paper. I mean, I go back to that toilet paper, just the idea, the concept, the meat, you can only get one dozen of eggs. And then it became so real and became so here. It was not here anymore. It was so here. And then it's another level of understanding, even for me, who deals with this all the time, of the reality of this and the veneer of what we perceive as society is so thin that just on the other side, this battle is raging, whether we choose to put our head in the sand or not. This battle is on. The battle for eternity, for everything that we hold dear, all of this, in some semblance or another, is being affected right now, and it's on. I don't know what else more to say. And that hit me so hard, and it was like somebody kicked me in the stomach, like a punch in the gut kind of thing. So that was the most stark thing to me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I had that same realization that it had always been theoretical and it had always been some other country where this sort of stuff happened, or it had always been, you know, some other time in history, or, you know, we were just examining it like a scientist would examine, you know, a petri
archaeologist or something.
Yeah. But then, you know, somebody that's talking about how cancer can affect them, but then they get cancer themselves. And then it's like, okay, I remember that movie, The Doctor, with William Hurt, where he was a doctor who was kind of like a freewheeling doctor. He used to like to play Jimmy Buffett while he was operating on people. And then, he wound up, and he was sort of flippant and everything, but then he wound up getting cancer and he wound up seeing the world through the eyes of his patients, which he had never done before. And I feel like we get that a little bit right now. We've always talked about, we talked about food shortages in Venezuela. We talked about authoritarian rule in some of these foreign countries. And we talked about, you know, the censorship of the media in places like China. And all of these things are, they're always somebody else's problem. And then we got it all at once, and we got it when it happened in our country, and we found out, oh boy, this is what it's really like. It's no longer theoretical. We're living through this actual event. And it's been scary, of course, for many people, but it's also, I've been taking this like sociological approach to it where I just feel like it's going to be one of the more fascinating events to study for decades to come, that not just the governmental changes that come out of it, but just the psychological component to this, where it's changed the way people view one another, and you know, where you've got to social distance and keep a couple feet away from and wear masks and all this stuff. And I start to think, and I wonder if you, and I know you've thought about this too, but I start to think, is all of this part of some conditioning plan to get us to get us ready for, you know, to get us living a very different lifestyle?
America will never, you know, if you said, you know, 2 years ago, if you said, America, we need to take the Constitution away, the Bill of Rights away, replace it with an authoritarian socialistic collective for your good, and your life needs to be directed in a social credit system, kind of mirrored after China, and life will be good. If you just do what we say, then everything will be fine. And how about that? You want to do that? America, there's no way we do it. Getting from A to B, the distance is too great. America just wouldn't do it. But if you take it step by step and you take one bite of the elephant at a time, which is what the globalists are doing, that becomes a much different task. They seem to be incredibly patient. They don't care. Generations, they don't care. What do they care? They're great, quote unquote, work or whatever. They'll wait. They'll wait us out. And so as we give away our heritage, our inheritance, our birthright, little by little, they'll just wait till we relent completely, and they'll push and see how far we go. There was an interesting, the governor of Utah, they since rescinded this, which I thought was a very good sign, but they wanted to, everybody who lands in Salt Lake, they wanted you to fill out a form to talk about where you've been. Have you been exposed to COVID? Basically, at the beginning of a social credit system, basically your immunity certificate. Not only that, if you drove into Utah, as you came across the border, the satellites would the cell towers would geolocate you and text you a form to fill out. And they've since rescinded that, but they did it. I mean, they had the press conference, and I think it was the lieutenant governor or somebody in their department said, we are tracking compliance. We are tracking compliance. And I thought, whoa, this isn't about this form. This is about tracking compliance. Will we do this? Will we accept this? How far can we go? They already got our Facebook information, our Google information, everything that we do. They're algorithming us. How far can we go? And when I went to Walmart, and Walmart started, you could see Walmart change. And then when they put the barriers up, everybody had a mask, and they had the blue dots everywhere, and only a certain amount of people could go in the store, and you had to stay on your blue dot to check out your food. I thought that was the point. My God, this is dog training.
Yeah.
I mean, so I thought, wow, this is dog training. I mean, this is insane. If this virus is as deadly as they say it is, this little mask from Ace Hardware that you got around your face, that's not going to protect you. And 6 feet, what's 6 feet if this is my life's in danger? I got a 10% chance if I get this to dying. This is ridiculous. If I sneeze, I mean, this is insane. This is stupid. It's not even legitimate. This is all dog training, and it really hit. And I was so sad because I saw so many people buying into it, and the spirit, you know, land of the free, home of the brave. Where is that? Where is the land of the free, home of the brave? Is it anywhere? Do we have a revolutionary spirit in us? Do we have the Bill of Rights in us, the Declaration of Independence, this stature that Americans are supposed to hold? Is it in us? One toilet paper package at a time at Walmart. We seem to be giving it away. That's what went through my mind.
Yeah, testing your compliance training or testing is an interesting
tracking. We are tracking your compliance.
Tracking your compliance.
We are monitoring your compliance. I thought, whoa, did he just say that?
That is straight out of 1984. I mean, this is nuts. So there is this. As David Icke talks about the totalitarian tiptoe, and you know, it's incremental removal of your rights, as he says, and as we all understand, you can't remove everybody's rights all at once, or else they will revolt. This seems like, it, you know, as David talks about going from A to B and B to C and C to D, this seems like they went from D to J. You know, all
yeah,
of a
sudden, they went pretty far. Yeah,
it's quite a jump. And my little conspiratorial mind started working when I saw all the people with masks. One of the things that I thought, well, I'm looking at this, going, having the same thoughts you have, which is, well, these masks, you know, look, I'm no doctor, but maybe they'll help a little bit, but are they going to save you? Probably not. But where my mind went to was that with all these cameras everywhere, as you walk into a Walmart or whatnot, you're going to – what they really want to see is all of the faces of the people that will not comply. That are,
and now that's a good point. That's a good point.
All this – facial recognition AI component that we've talked about, we know that it's going towards social credit systems and whatnot. If they were thinking, what would be a good way to out all those people that don't trust the narrative? Well, everyone that doesn't trust it will walk around without a mask, and then we'll get their full face on there. And so I don't know, maybe I'm, but
wow. So they got to feel like, wow, these people wearing masks, I bet you 95% of them will take this vaccine. That's probably got to be going through their mind. Yeah,
for sure. And we've already got them. We got them.
Yeah, these other people.
It's all those other people without the mask. Now we want to know who they are, and they might be someone we want to track and keep an eye on. And the reason why I come up with this, which is, you know, may or may not be true, it's just a theory, but it ties back to something that you said, which is the social credit system. Now, we've seen this roll out in Shenzhen, China, where it is it's already a dystopian nightmare there. It's already Blade Runner. Blade Runner is in the past, of course. In fact, if we look back on the actual movie Blade Runner, we have now passed the date in where that movie was supposed to take place in. But in Shenzhen, they've got everything tied into their social credit system, where if you're smoking on a train, they can fine you. If you are interacting with the wrong type of people on social
media, jaywalk.
Your score goes down, or maybe if you're the wrong type of person, everyone else that interacts with you, their score goes down. How do you see this moving forward, tying in what is destined to become in our way, a social credit system, in conjunction with this form of like medical martial law?
I'm not going to even speak that this is our future. I don't like to go there, whether it is or isn't or whatever. I like to speak to something else.
Okay.
I that's obviously some people's plans. I mean, your book goes over this pretty good. I mean, you put all this together and the model of China, which you have to earn your social credit. You're not, you know, think about this. I'm going to get a little deep here, but this is important. Christians, Americans believe that you have been given a dominion by your creator, whatever word, you know, Christians say it's God, Jesus, what have you, other, but still open to a creator. We all agree there's a creator. So you've been given a dominion, and so you have earned your place in this earth by your creator. Your creator deems you fit for society. Your creator deems you fit to exercise and walk around and to be part of society. Therefore, who is government to tell you different? Okay, that's one view. That's the American view. That's Christianity's view, other religions too. But that's America's view, most certainly. That's Thomas Jefferson. The other view, China's view, is no, the great whole, the great work is of the state. And so the state then is the God. The state is the decider of these things, and your place in society must be approved then by the state. And so the state is the God, literally. The state is God. And in America, we believe that our creator is God and that government is subservient to this ideal. These are two polar opposite ideas.
Yeah.
And so this is the battle of what we're seeing. And if you want to go further, the Bible obviously talks about it, the Quran to some degree, the many religious books. Greek mythology talks about it. I'll put it in terms of that. I don't know what, you know, with the religious makeup of your audience. I don't think it matters. This is all natural. These are all natural discussions for thousands of years. Greek and Roman mythology. Okay. Ares plays the Lucifer part, was mad at Zeus because Zeus gave fire to man. Zeus gave divinity to man. Ares was mad about it, was jealous about it. He wanted to prove to Zeus that he had made a mistake and prove to man by making man the god of war, have disease, have what have you, so that they would prove that this plan to give choice and liberty to man is stupid, and that the only way to do it is to have a social credit system. It's really Luciferianism, that we will take the choice and we will direct, Lucifer will direct, if you're talking about religious dogma, will direct your choices and to show you that God has condemned you to a life of misery, that your choice, your liberty, your this dominion that you hold on to, these rights that you cling to, you know, you heard that bitter clinger, you know, these bitter clingers, all these things you cling to have caused all the chaos in the world, and that you got to give them over for us to have peace. And I will create peace and give all the glory to me. And so that's what we're seeing. I mean, this is Luciferianism versus the American ideals. And this is what's being played out on this high level with China, is that you give over your will and your choice to us in a social system that we direct for the benefit of all, for the benefit of this hive. Your dominion, your creativity, your individuality is secondary. Not only secondary, is third or fourth on the total pole compared to what we're doing. You have to give it all over to us so that for the benefit, for the good of society, so that we can keep you happy and healthy, and we will make you happy. Where the Declaration of Independence says that we have a natural right for the pursuit of happiness. God does not claim to make you happy. He gives you the ability to choose your destiny and your happiness. Two completely different ideals. That is the miracle of America. That is what we're beginning to lose. Not beginning. We're far down the road. Our schools don't teach it. Our own law. It is the miracle of this country. And it is also the principle and the conviction and the idea that is the anti-venom to tyranny. Because if you have a conviction that your rights and your connection is to God, then who cares what a government says? I mean, the government is like a peon compared to God. So they've tried to sever that. And in China, that's why you can't have a Bible in China. And young people can't even go to church. And you can't have prayer meetings because they want your loyalty to be to them. Into the socialist state. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I went in a very roundabout way. That is the battle. That is where we're at.
Well, that explains why that version of reality seems so hellish to people.
It is.
Because it is.
It is hell.
It is a system put together by people that have a different set of priorities, a different set of loyalty, and I'm not
morality. Yeah. And a different morality. People say these people are immoral. No, they're not immoral. There's a difference between a Satanist and a Luciferian. Luciferians are very moral. It's just not the same moral that you have.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, go ahead.
And that's let's go with that, because for someone like me who I'm appreciative of all religions. I haven't picked a team necessarily. I'm interested in all. I think there's good aspects of all of them, really. But when I've used this term to describe some of the people that are ruling our world right now as Luciferians, and I point that out to me not being very religious, because I know that sometimes people that are very religious, they say, you know, that person is a satanic or Satanist or a Lucifer. It's sort of their go-to insult, right? But in my particular case, I don't necessarily go around calling people Satanists or Luciferians, but in this particular instance, I choose the word Luciferian because that is what they are and who they are. That is their religion.
Absolutely.
That is their philosophy and guiding mentality. And we make this assumption, and it's a dangerous one, that the people that we see on TV, the people that we see in government, the people that we see in Hollywood and our movies and everything, that they're just like us. And that is, that becomes not the case as soon as you wind up on like a big TV show or you're a politician, everybody knows you. Just not even being, not even digging into the, you know, anything dark. It just, you're just not like everybody else once you make it to that level. You have people staring at you wherever you want to, wherever you go, people asking for your autograph and things like that. You wind up living in some weird version of reality to begin with. But then you add in this component that a lot of the guys on this team are all into this very unusual and dark religion of Luciferianism. How have we allowed that to happen? How have we allowed them to take over all of these aspects of control in our system of living?
School is a huge part of this. The public school, I call it government school because they teach government. That's what they teach. But Charlotte Isserby, I've been fortunate enough to get to know her pretty well. And her work is seminal. I mean, if you're going to make a list of the five most important books written over the last, you know, 60 years, I would say in this type of genre, the number one most important book written is, to me, none dare call it conspiracy, written by Gary Allen and the congressman that helped him, Larry Abram, I can't remember, but a congressman helped him and they had access to all the records. That was the number one most important book for this type of what we're discussing. Number two, three, four, and five, they go in some order, who knows. Definitely The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin. And Charlotte Isserby's book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, at some point is in there. Because the perception that the educational system is there to, like Thomas Jefferson, to educate the whole person, and then the person's own intellect given to them by the creator is then to expand and to make use of the natural resources that are here to better the whole world. That's just a fallacy. She had all the documents. She went into that. She was in high level of public education under Reagan, under the Department of Education. She saw the direction that they want, that schools were to be used as to form a planned economy, modeled after China, the Carnegie Foundation, all these things. This idea, this concept that people understand this, that Skinnerism, outcome-based education. What is outcome-based education? Well, you're seeing it at Walmart. It's dog training. It's Pavlov. When you see a stimulus, your mouth starts to salivate. So students now have been taught for generations that you put a certain input in, and they've experimented to the point we know what the output back will be. And that's what the school system has been. So hey, you ask how. The main conviction and idea, the American ideal, the greatest political statement ever written with any force ever, is we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by the creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That governments are instituted among men to secure these rights, and that they derive their powers, their just powers, from the consent of the government governed. That is the American ideal in one sentence. Thomas Jefferson wrote it, or, you know, mostly wrote it, edited, what have you. And that is America. And so we have relinquished this. It wasn't so much the idea in schools. The controllers did not. It's not that they don't like religion per se, or they think that religion certainly should be out of society, or separation of church and state, which is not constitutional law, is nowhere in law. It is nowhere in our history. It's a ridiculous concept. It's that if they are going to control a society, their loyalty had to be somewhere else. And so it doesn't matter if it's, you know, in China, there's certain, like the Falun Gong. Mm-hmm. They're persecuting the Falun Gong. They're not Christians at all. It's not Christianity per se. Christianity has that probably most virile aspect of it, you know, going back in America, the 1700 Christian era. Christian in America had that, you know, where the Spirit of God is, there is liberty. Now the churches have become, you know, frankly, an instrument of control and of whatever. So I don't even like to talk about religion per se, but that's where the conversation ends up going. So when you separate from this concept, this idea, this American ideal, then what is left? And so the dog training comes in to then get your loyalty and your response to something different. And so now you no longer respond to Red, White, and Blue and Thomas Jefferson. In fact, the schools teach you to criticize Thomas Jefferson. Oh, he's a dirty slave owner. He's a racist pig. We need to take down statues of him. Mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson's mind is the mind of America. Every historian agrees that Thomas Jefferson basically, they'll separate America into two ideals, the Jeffersonian America and Lincoln's America, you know, where the control and the corporate America, corporate government. This is the founder, really, the ideal of America. He didn't like religions per se. They knew what religions was a control. But when you break that ideal, which unfortunately, for the most part in America, fortunately or unfortunately, you could only find in religions. You could only find in churches. That's where the idea came from in the 16, 1700s. Mixed with all the other things about it, whatever, that's neither here nor there, really. They taught the people this connection to the Creator and that the Creator was intimately concerned about them and their freedom. Now, when that's severed, what is left? So now, you know, if you're not going to stand for anything, you'll fall for anything. You'll fall for everything. And so they're able through propaganda, through mind control, through the schools, through Pavlov's training, dog training, outcome-based education, they're getting us to slowly relinquish and to buy into this new form of government, this new form of control. We don't know the history. America does not know the Bill of Rights. They don't even know what it is. They don't have an understanding of it. I'm talking about majority, even 20% of America. They don't really understand it. And the miracle it is. So if you don't understand it, if somebody offers you some alternative and all you see is alternative A and B that the educational system is presenting, well, you forget about this. It'll be people who are 60, 70 years old, they still have some connection. What happens when they die? You know, my generation, these young 20-year-olds, they have no concept of this. They have no connection or loyalty to this. And this is where I appreciate what you said about religions. This is not a religious argument. This is not a religion. It's like I had this discussion with an atheist one time. I don't believe in God. Well, okay, fine. Don't believe in God. But you better believe that your rights come from somewhere besides government, because if they came from government, then they're going to control them. And so that concept and that idea, that's where we're at. So how do we get here? We have lost our conviction of the American ideal. The conviction of the American ideal. Buckminster Fuller, if you want to destroy a system, you don't fight a system. They didn't fight our system, the American system. You create an alternative and then bring energy to it. They did not fight Thomas Jefferson. I mean, now they are because they're to the end or close to the end. They didn't fight Thomas Jefferson. They let this grow up all around us thinking that Thomas Jefferson was alive and well, thinking that the Declaration of Independence is up in Washington and you can see it under a light. And you can look at it. See, there it is. What do you mean? It's right there. You still have America. Oh, okay. All right. And then all the while, they're funding tax dollars, money, energy, educational system into this counterfeit, just like Lucifer, a counterfeit. Getting back to that dynamic, it's the counterfeit. And we think we're in America anymore. You're not America. This is corporate government. This is corporate. You're who you are, your unalienable rights, your unalienable endowment, your dominion, your natural ability to direct the future of your life has all been virtually severed, and for the good and sake of this new creation that's here. Meanwhile, Thomas Jefferson's left by the side of the road, the Declaration of Independence, and nobody hardly knows anything about it. So how did we get here? It's not that this did not do it. Our relinquishing of this did it.
Gotcha.
Because this is the anti-venom, the antithesis. This is the solution. This is our greatest accomplishment, and it is our greatest hope all at the same time, because it's the only idea that will overcome this, because people need conviction, because now the choices become starker. They're more in your face. The choices are more right. You know, pretty soon it's going to be stand in line for this mandatory vaccine and chip, or don't go to work. See, the choices, it's way different now. You know, stay in your house, don't go to the beach, or we'll fine you $1,000. You know, the choices are stark now, where 50 years ago they weren't stark and nobody cared. Where's the conviction? This ideal, this concept that we've left by the side of the road is our solution. I work a lot with Sheriff Mack with CSPOA.org. working with sheriffs so that they defend constitutional principles and count at the county level, local level, getting out of Washington. Doesn't matter what Washington does. This is an important work. A return to this ideal and understanding of this is our only hope. And people say, well, America, you know, you hear people, Christians, they say, well, America needs to repent and turn to God. What does that even mean anymore? Well, they need to repent and turn to God. Okay, that's what, okay, I'll go with you. I agree with you. But that doesn't mean go to your church and listen to some talking head talk of make you feel good on Sunday. What it means is getting back to respecting who you are and the respecting who you are. So I respect who Charlie is and know that Charlie is endowed by God and has a dominion and has unalienable rights and has this unbelievable divinity of spark that is in him, and that he has the ability to live his life, and that I don't care how many people get together and say different, the universe, nature, God, our creator, has demanded and deemed that that be so. If you want to get back to God, get back to the Bill of Rights and Declaration of Independence. Are we endowed by our creator or aren't we? Is the Declaration of Independence the law? Is the Bill of Rights the law or isn't it? So how did we get here? Because we have left our birthright on the frickin' side of the road, and we've bought into this other bullshit. That's how we're here.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fascinating because it seems like the religion of government is being pushed more so than anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And maybe no accident. As you talked about Carnegies and Rockefellers come up, make a fortune that they could never spend in their lifetimes, and then want to have some, there's something that happened.
They wanted more. How can we get it all?
Yeah. How do we change society? How do we make the society work the way we want it to work? So with the public schooling or government schooling, as you more appropriately define it, you put them in single file rows and have the bell ring when class is over and the bell ring when school is done, so that it simulates this industrial workspace, and you get them prepared for that. And there's something very insane, but yet practical about these industrialists that want to shape society. And we think of that as being something that happened, you know, 100 years ago and not, you know, irrelevant to today's society. But we're starting to see it again with Bill Gates coming into the situation with Common Core, financing that. And that is, I mean, that is intentionally designed to screw up kids, especially when it comes to math. It confuses them to a point where they give up and they don't want to participate in anymore. And lately the talk has turned to what Bill Gates is doing with his push for vaccinations. Now, you and I know about this, and we talked about it on your show, that his work with the World Health Organization is troubling for anybody that has actually taken the time to dig into it. What's your take on Bill Gates? Where do you think he's going with this whole thing?
Bill Gates just wants what's best for you, Charlie.
Sure he does.
Well, see, in a twisted Luciferian mind, you talk about morality. That's what they believe. They believe, I'm helping you, Charlie. You come here and get this vaccine and just go along with this. I'm helping you, Charlie. Why don't you let me help you, Charlie? Now get over here and get in line, Charlie. Really, that's what they think. What do I think of Bill Gates? His family comes as a highly eugenic background. His father was very high up in Planned Parenthood. At some point, you know, he taught us that we could play Tetris on a computer and do it well, or Microsoft Word, we could type. And so then we thought he was God almost, and that's how he's become. Now he took billions of dollars, kind of like the Carnegies, and now thinks he needs to make the world better. He's gone to Pakistan, India. They've run him out of India, the vaccine situation there. Pakistan, the smaller villages now execute UN vaccine vans who come to vaccinate people. They send the women and children to the hills. You know, somebody, well, you can kind of imagine this from some movie. They look down and say, oh, they're coming to the hills. And then the men sit around and they execute all of the UN workers, execute them. because they know of what had been done with the vaccines and experiments largely funded by Bill Gates and your Microsoft computer that we're using, that I'm using right now, Skype. See, thank you, Bill Gates, for this fantastic Skype platform. But please don't, kill all the people in Pakistan or sterilize them. That's what I think of Bill Gates. I think he is a Judas goat in many ways. I think he is like this calm voice. It's like, was it Bernard Shaw? The people will learn to love their servitude. It'll be a calm, friendly gas. That's how Bill Gates is. If we do real good with vaccines, we can control the population. We can't keep grandma alive because then we can't hire 10 teachers. So we have to make a decision. So grandma's got to go. I'm sorry. Don't you want your children taught? Isn't that important that they go to school? You can just, this Mr. Rogers type character has become to try to soft pedal you into the New World Order. And this Luciferian agenda where they control you, they tag you, they Nazi Germany you, put a star, a yellow star on you, whatever you want to say. I detest him. I abhor him. He is an enemy to all that's good in this world and all that's libertarian based. So there you go.
Yeah, it's I don't remember anybody deciding that Bill Gates is in charge. He just seems to have shown up and started driving the car.
He made Skype, so now we need to listen to him about medical decisions. I don't know how they relate.
But it's fascinating because on the one hand, Bill Gates is not a doctor. I'm not a doctor and you're not a doctor, but it's like, do we need to be doctors to recognize a scam when you see one, when you dig into the Gates Foundation, like you said, being thrown out of India for causing paralysis of 500,000 kids through their vaccines. And then you see him and you say, well, I don't know about Bill Gates, but I do know that the World Health Organization is helping out. And you say, okay, well, do you know that the World Health Organization was busted in 2014 by putting sterilants in their tetanus vaccinations and sterilizing?
Admittedly. They have admitted it.
That's the key. So it's like we're in this really strange situation where the people that are on our televisions at night or we see on our computer and videos and whatnot that are telling us how to behave and what this coronavirus pandemic is going to be and what it is and what it's going to be are probably the least reputable people you could possibly want to get advice from. But for some reason, they just keep showing up over and over again. So that leads me to the speculation that either the government knows this and wants these people to push this information, or the media wants this to happen as well, or maybe even both, that they're both in on it. Why are we getting the least reputable people being in charge of the most important event that we're living through?
Well, like you said, I mean, most of them, I wouldn't trust to watch my dog while I went to the store. I just wouldn't. The church, is it the church hearings? So much information goes through my head. So correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's the church hearings in 75. William Colby's talking about, he's being interviewed by Congress in a congressional hearing and asking about the CIA and journalism, CIA and the news media. And he says openly, well, we have people planted in basically all major news media organizations, and there's 400 people writing scripts and writing the news. It's floors. And then one car, hold on, let's take the rest of this in secret. Let's not talk about this in open. Oh, okay, all right. And so it came in open, right there in the open, that the CIA in 1975, which is 45 years ago, was in every major news agency in America, and you can then extrapolate that to the world. I'm sure it's no different the rest of the world, but certainly America was owned, influenced heavily by the CIA and what they want us to hear. And this idea about a deep state, this idea about a conspiracy, this idea. Now your mind begins to wonder, and how things have been moved. My grandfather used to say, boy, these politicians are stupid. And I was little, and of course, I believed everything my grandfather said. Yeah, you're right, Grandpa. They're so dumb. And now I realize they're not that dumb. They're not dumb. Barack Obama's not a stupid individual. He's not dumb. So then what is this? And then you put it all together and you see why people in a suit and a smile and their bleach white teeth, and they're telling you in certain voices all this information and getting you to believe this and creating a perception of reality of how things are. Like, wow, they're not dumb at all. They're actually pretty smart. And so that, that makes us dumb. We're kind of dumb for listening to them and giving them credibility.
Yeah, the media is a disaster. I put a lot of this at their, you know, a lot of the blame for this on them.
Well, the really blame is us. The blame is us for listening to them.
Yeah.
You know, in this, we're even in that we give away our power so much. They're doing this. They're doing, yes, they are. And another, you know, going back to the Luciferian agenda, I don't want to make this a religious discussion, and it's not.
It doesn't seem like one either.
It's okay, just, good. All right. They, people say, well, they want to depopulate the earth and they want to do this and this and this and this. All true. They have the power, supposedly. They have the ability, the capability. That's a better word. They have the capability to shoot off nuclear bombs and let off virus. I mean, anybody who's watching this, they have to assume, especially seeing their reach and their influence and their ability to control a situation is so much greater than the average person even believed. They have the ability to do what they have wanted to do. But why don't they do it? Because energetically and universally, there's something divine that's in each one of us, our intelligence, our imagination. They have to capture that imagination and then use it for us to give over. The New World Order will come in with a carrot, not a stick. They will pull us with a carrot, not beat us with a stick. They'll push us through crisis, but then the carrot will come in and offer to pull us in. It has to be for their morality. There's that word again. For their morality, we have to choose them. Lucifer wants us to choose this system, to choose his rule. Therefore, he gets the power and the glory. How does he get the power? Because our divinity, we gave over in choice to them. That's the dynamic. And so when we have this discussion like this, all we have to do is stop giving them our attention, our imagination, our divinity. It doesn't matter what they do. They don't matter. These politicians, they're irrelevant. The New World Order, irrelevant. And I know that seems counterintuitive, but it's true. What's really relevant is our conviction, our divinity, our imagination, our choice, our perception. Scientists have proven in the universe that perception is reality, that to some extent, that we are able to shape it by scientists can't even do an experiment without finding the influence of our observation. Our very observation affects the universe. They've proven that. And so Luciferians want to then take that observation, imagination, and then turn it. So the world is then created in the image. You know, we're created in God's image, the beast's image, the mark of the beast, the image of the beast, that can be transformed and de-evolved into into this kind of situation. So I hope that answered your question.
Wow. That's Daniel Brigman. He's an Israeli asset. I mean, he's the host of the Power Hour. Tell these people where they can find you.
ThePowerHour.com. ThePowerHour.com is our show. Of course, you know, podcasts. You can listen live. We have a live terrestrial radio show, satellite, shortwave, 7490 and 13450, I think, is our shortwave and satellite. And also, you know, on-demand podcasts and what have you. ThePowerHour.com.
Awesome. I love it. I love coming on your show. You guys are always into some cool topics. We don't even have to discuss what we're going to talk about. We just jump right into the madness of it all. So I love that format of your show. Thank you so much for coming and checking us out. And for everyone watching, if you like the show, please share it to as many people as you can. God knows the social media platforms aren't going to do us any favors by hooking us up with the algorithm. So it's up to us to share this information. Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, see what you just said? See, yes, they don't matter. What matters is if your audience will share this.
Yeah.
That's what matters. They don't matter. Google doesn't matter. You matter.
We matter. So let's take back the power. Fight these bastards. Let's get them. Daniel, you're the best. Thanks so much.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.